Kiyoko now. Here's a Honduran. He'll whip it in back to the far post. Elise! Albert Elise! La Panterita! It's a Honduran connection.
This is Soccer Matters on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN975.com.
Brought to you by the Daspit Law Firm. DaspitLaw.com. From the ESPN 97.5 studios, here's Glenn Davis.
Hey, welcome back to Soccer Matters on ESPN 97.5. We continue to roll on here. Hey, soccer fans, I got a new sponsor to Soccer Matters. It's Tri-Eagle Energy. There's synergy with their energy because they're also the official energy provider of the Houston Dynamo, Houston Dash, and BBVA Compass Stadium. So let's talk energy. There are a lot of energy providers out there. There's always different offers ranging from free weekends, free days, cash bonuses. You know the stick. It goes on and on. You may have fallen for one of these offers, and months later you find out you're paying a higher rate or there are additional fees on your bill. It's different with Tri-Eagle Energy. They keep it simple. The rate you see is the rate you pay. No gimmicks, no minimum usage fees, no charges if you go over a certain amount of electricity. So check out Tri-Eagle Energy. Call 877-93-EAGLE or log on to TriEagleEnergy.com. Get in there. Use promo code ESPN for an additional discount. TriEagleEnergy.com, promo code ESPN. Also want to mention something to you. March 17th, and you know pediatric cancer awareness and fighting pediatric cancer is close to my heart. Cyfair Dynamo's Youth Soccer Club. My good friend Olivier Finidori, former professional soccer player with the Houston Hotshots in the indoor league that used to play at the Summit. They're going to do the annual Kick Cancer Soccer Clinic in conjunction with Soccer Matters at Dias Park off Kitsman Road in the Cypress area. It's only $50. You get a beautiful T-shirt. All the proceeds go back to a 501c charity, the Curing Children's Cancer Fund, and those funds are earmarked for pediatric cancer research. So it's dynamosoccer.com or cccfund.org to sign up. cccfund.org to sign up. And by the way, 15,000 plus youth yearly are diagnosed with cancer. Enough of that stuff. All right. Greg Berhalter came into Houston yesterday, has been going all around the city doing tremendous work promoting the United States-Chile game on March 26th. You can get your tickets at ussoccer.com or down at the BBVA Compass Stadium box office. He was in early in the morning, as we mentioned earlier in the show tonight, with John and Lance, three segments in the morning. That's unprecedented on Drive Time Radio. And a real big thank you to John Granato and Lance for all their work this morning. They did a great job on the interview, by the way. But he's been all over the city doing a whole bunch of media. I also had an opportunity to get my interview with Greg Berhalter. We appreciate U.S. Soccer for getting down here and bringing him here. Again, it's U.S. Chile, March 26, ussoccer.com for tickets. Here's the interview I did with Greg Berhalter, the United States men's national team coach. U.S. manager Greg Berhalter joining us right now. And wow, what a day it's been for you. So you were on mainstream radio this morning with our guys, John and Lance. That was a great interview this morning. Three segments. Did you enjoy that?
I did. You know, I think the guys did a great job. You know, it's really interesting to talk soccer to people that don't speak it every day and hear their perspective. I think that was a great part of the conversation.
Yeah, it's great. And again, March 26th, the United States taking on Chile. You can get your tickets at ussoccer.com. Greg in town. He saw the Champions League game last night. He's been running all over Houston today and doing all kinds of media appearances. All right. One of the big sells for this team for me is just the youth and the youth now beginning to kind of take this team over and grab the mantle of the United States national team. Is that exciting for you? And what type of work does that entail individually with some of these kids?
So it is exciting. You know, the way I look at it is, you know, we still have an obligation to be developing the culture of the national team. And with that, you do need experienced players, guys that have been around. But we also have this core group of young players that's coming through that, you know, are performing at a really high level. And to work with these guys and to see their enthusiasm is really exciting for a coach. So what we've been doing is, you know, we've been meeting with these guys and going over video and talking to them about style of play and trying to do as much prep work as we can before they get into camp, so they already have an understanding of some of our objectives.
Let's talk about Tyler Adams, and I thought his development and the way he moved on to playing in the Bundesliga, where you obviously played as a player as well. He's in a club that has a similar playing style. They have three clubs, the Red Bulls, Salzburg, and Leipzig, as you know. That just seemed like a pretty seamless, from the outside, transition into playing in the Bundesliga, coming from Major League Soccer.
You know, it was, and I think in Tyler's case, the first thing is he's a phenomenal soccer player, so he has the skill set. But the second thing is, you know, the path was right for him in terms of playing for New York Red Bull, you know, staying within the organization, going to a team that plays very similar. You know, I watched his first game in the Bundesliga, and I saw, you know, the camera showed him in the tunnel before the game. And this is an 18-year-old, 19-year-old getting ready to play his first Bundesliga game, and he looked like he's played 100 games already. I mean, really good mindset by Tyler, very, very calm and very focused on achieving his goals.
All right, so we have this influx of players in Germany. Obviously, Germany has embraced the American player, Josh Sargent, Weston McKennie, Tyler Adams. There's more over there. What is it about Germany and the culture of soccer over there with young players that you obviously experienced that they will benefit from?
So, you know, I was just over in Germany, and I got that question was asked a lot. And when I'm thinking about it, I think there's a couple things. The first thing is that there was a transition from the Germans to start playing younger players. It wasn't always the case. When I went there, it was older players.
Yeah.
And you know, younger players didn't get an opportunity. So the first thing is Germany embraced younger players, athletic players, you know, players that can really – execute the vision of the coaches. So that's the first thing that's positive. The second thing is I think that the American soccer player, the high-level American soccer player, matches up really well with the Germans in terms of, you know, we have good, very good mentalities. I think we're physically very good, and technically we're good players as well. So I think those three things, plus our adaptability, really makes it comfortable for German clubs to want to look at our players.
U.S. men's national team coach, we're very pleased to have in the studio. I'm very thankful. Greg Berhalter, USsoccer.com. Get your tickets. The United States will be here in Houston to take on March 26th, Chile. That is a wonderful match. We'll get a little bit more into that. But let's go back to Germany, because it's interesting what's going on in Germany, because all of a sudden the German Federation comes out and says, guys like Thomas Müller are not going to continue to play for the team, Jerome Boateng. And then we've also heard their sort of general manager, Oliver Bierhoff, talking about the fact that, hey, we're not producing, you know, the game-changing player anymore. And, of course, that's something we always talk about here in the United States.
It is interesting. And I think that the Germans, you know, have reinvented themselves after the 2002 World Cup, and have made it a priority to develop a different game model. And I think now they're at a crossroads again, where they're looking at themselves and they're saying, hey, how do we need to keep developing? How do we need to keep improving? And they're asking some questions. And I think rightfully so, after the performance in the last World Cup and some of the other recent performances. But I like how they're not afraid to, you know, to look at what they're doing and question it.
Do we have to be decisive a little bit more in that area in the future as a soccer-playing country at our higher levels?
I think every country needs to do that, right, to a certain extent.
Because it is pretty impressive when all of a sudden it's like, wow, okay, there is a midstream change here in our thinking. And look at the players that are now being moved on.
Yeah, and what you'd like to see, I mean, what you'd like to have seen in Germany's case, you know, and I don't want to speak for Germany because it's, you know, it's one of the world's soccer powers, but that they would have realized that maybe a little earlier and said, okay, here's the course we're on. Maybe we need to correct it while we're – instead of now saying, okay, we need to take these drastic measures.
These are difficult decisions, though, when you're transitioning guys that are legendary,
and
right?
And one thing I'll tell you as a coach is you have the tendency to stick with players that have done it for you already.
Yeah.
So I completely understand the coach's point of view.
Partial human nature, right?
Yeah, exactly.
He's Greg Berhalter, U.S. men's national team coach, U.S. taking on Chile. That's a game you're not going to want to miss. March 26, USsoccer.com, to get your tickets there. All right, so in your vision, 2-3 years from now, what does the U.S. men's national team look like?
So I think, you know, we will have a clear identity. We will have a way to play that when you turn on the television, you don't even need to see the uniforms and you'll know it's a U.S. soccer playing. And that's what we're striving for. And we want to be developing the players in the phases of the game that they can perform their tasks. But we also want that game model to be exciting. We want the fans to appreciate it. We want a game model that can stand up to some of these bigger countries, and we can perform well, and we can hurt these other countries. So overall, you know, we would want something that's identifiable, that people are really drawn to.
Isn't that important for any team? I mean, that's how you get a fan base behind you. And by the way, you've done an amazing job as an inspirational leader getting on shows and talking about your team. Because when I look at you talk about the U.S. national team, I don't feel like there's anything hidden behind the screen. I think you're very open. And to me, it instills confidence that you're that confident to talk about the intricacies and the subtleties that you're trying to achieve with this group of young men.
Well, thank you. That's nice to hear. But secondly, you know, I think that, you know, the way I see it is we're all in this together. I really do. And, you know, the amount of support I've gotten from MLS clubs, and I really feel like, you know, this is a job that I have, but it's on behalf of a lot of people. And a lot of people are very supportive. And so it's a big responsibility. And the more we can be inclusive, the more I think we can get people behind us.
So when you take this job, did you realize, based on where the U.S. was, not qualifying, it took a while for you to be named a head coach and people were upset it didn't come quicker. Did you say, look, I do have to be very open with the public because we are in some ways trying to rebud the interest around the U.S. men's national
team? I think that's part of who I am as a person. You know, that's kind of how I operate. But I do think it's, again, it's a big responsibility for this job. And I do think that giving information out is important. Communicating is very important.
He's Greg Berhalter, U.S. men's national team coach, in studio here, was in studio this morning. So he has been all over Houston today, really promoting the U.S., and we're very, very appreciative of it. Talk a little bit about, obviously, the player that the mainstream knows, Christian Pulisic, and where he is now. And obviously, he's got an interesting situation, headed to Chelsea. He's had some injury problems. And what he will mean to the national team.
So I think that, you know, Christian's the type of player that you want to build around because of his skill set, because of his game-changing ability. You know, he's a guy that you're excited to work with and to think about the possibilities that he can bring to life by what he can do on the field is exciting for a coach. And I think for us, it's, you know, it's understanding Christian at a deeper level, motivating him at a deep level, to perform for our team that he can really help the club because he's a special guy and a special player.
How about a quick hit on Timothy Weah at Celtic in Scotland?
Yeah, you know, Timothy, we've been watching intensively now that he's been getting more playing time with Celtic. And, you know, he also has a game-changing ability with his speed and his tremendous pace and a good striker of the ball, good finisher. You know, he's interesting. What I will say about all these young players, and I think it's important, is that they go to an environment where they can be on the field and perform. It's very hard for a player to continue his development if he's not on the field, and that's a key element. When I sat down with Timothy in Paris, you know, that's one thing I mentioned to him. I said, listen, you got to be on the field because we need to see you taking strides, and you can't just develop playing national team games. It's impossible. We don't have enough games.
Mm-hmm. So you're setting the bar high for these guys. He's Greg Berhalter, U.S. men's national team coach, which takes me back to Major League Soccer and all the additional allocation money, and maybe it's nudging out playing time for young Americans. Does MLS have to get braver in general? And I know some clubs are doing it more than others, but to be on an MLS roster is great, but to not be playing on an MLS roster as a young player could be the kiss of death. So, you know, how do we balance that? Because we know some of these coaches are keeping jobs and have to win.
Yeah, so that's an interesting question. And this is just my opinion, so take it for what it's worth. But what I see is that, you know, the extra spend in MLS rosters is helping the product in general, right? The mm-hmm. level of competition is getting better, right? So in the short term, and then at the same time, MLS academies are improving and they're producing better players. Right, the level that MLS academies are working at, it has improved. It's a high level now. So in the short term, what I see happening is the academy product will have a more difficult time breaking into the first team because the first teams are better. But those players that do break in are going to be better players, and that's going to help U.S. soccer. And then in the long term, I think as these academies are producing more players, they're going to get opportunities in the long term because we'll be producing better players.
Greg, let's go a little personal with you. What do you do away from the game? Because I know you're going all over the country. You're tracking your players. You're having video conferences. I mean, people don't understand the things. A lot of your work is done before you even meet your players. Yeah. What do you do to kind of break it up and get away from the game and just kind of get a reboot?
Yeah, so I think the thing I do the most is spend time with family. You know, I have four children, you know, a very supportive wife who's been with me through this whole journey of Europe and my playing career, now my coaching career. And that's how I really unwind is just being myself in front of my family.
Yeah, that's a good way to do it. I think four kids would help you with that as well. You have taken principles from Dutch soccer, having played there. I mean, when I look at the places you've been and the influences you've had, it's a pretty remarkable upbringing and variety of styles of play, which you've personally been involved with and obviously worked with all these managers and all these different stops. And we saw Ajax yesterday put on the, you know, a typical Johan Cruyff 4-3-3 annihilation of Real Madrid. Let's just say it was incredibly impressive. What did the Netherlands mean to you in your career from that perspective? Because you are a cerebral guy.
Yeah, you know, I don't know how much time we have for this question, but it was, you know, it was just amazing my time spent in Holland. And when I think about, you know, some of the experiences, you know, this is when Ajax won the Champions League. You know, PSV was a very strong team, and it was really a time, a really explosive time in Dutch soccer, where this player after player was going to top clubs. You know, you talk about Mark Overmars, Edwin van der Sar, Frank de Boer, Ronald de Boer,
Kluivert,
Edgar Davids, Patrick Kluivert, Clarence Seedorf. You know,
Kluivert had the winner right in that Champions League, and he was like 17 or 18?
18 years old. Yeah,
jeez.
And I mean, so it, and then so you have the great. You know, this great team and this great culture of soccer. And then you have the conversations, and Dutch people love to discuss and they love to talk about tactics. And I fully immersed myself in that. You know, I was right there in it and trying to learn as much as I can. And so the game model that we have now is a positional based game, right? The derivative would be from.
So you pulled some of that positional based from the Dutch Eredivisie in your experience.
Principles that we work with that are positional based principles from Dutch soccer, and then there, you know, I think there's other elements from German soccer, and there's other elements that we're incorporating. But I think the derivative, you know, could be from a positional game from Holland.
Last one before we let you go. Your first game against Panama, going out there leading the United States, that must have been something special.
You know, it was special, but the thing was, it was more like a curiosity type of thing that I was having, because you work with the players for 2.5 weeks, and I was just curious to see, okay, what is it going to look like on the field, right? Because you don't know. It's been 2.5 weeks of work, and you have to see what the product will actually look like, and that's why I was excited for it. So when I'm watching the game, there's a personal moment that's nice, but for me, it was more the curiosity of, okay, how is this thing going to look here?
Isn't it inspiring, though, to have a clean slate here and have a lot of these young guys that, look, you know, when I watch these games on TV, I'm looking at guys going, wow, you know, this kid wants to be a part of the future, and he wants to be a part of it for a long time. And he's trying to stick his flag in the ground.
Yeah. And that is exciting. And that is, you know, working with the guys in January, they all were fantastic to work with. And meeting all the guys in Europe so far, they've been great. And you know, I'm really looking forward to working with this team.
Greg, we thank you for your time. Thanks for coming around ESPN 97.5 and getting on in the morning show as well with John and Lance. And we wish you the best of luck, and we're definitely behind you at this station. And we're looking forward to your visit here in March 26 in Houston.
Thanks, Glenn.
So that was Greg Berhalter. Again, excited to see that game against Chile, one of the top teams in South America. That's a team that's going to come in with Eduardo Vargas, probably Arturo Vidal. Lots of names. Who knows if Alexis Sanchez will be here? I'm not sure about that one. But that is one we need to get out to, and I'll tell you why we need to get out to. That game is being scrutinized as an international game when it comes to taking all the data for trying to get World Cup 2026. I think there's only 9,000 to 10,000 tickets sold. We got to get a move on. So I hope we're going to get out to that game. United States against Chile. I think there's a good chance that you will see Christian Pulisic here. Tyler Adams, some of the players that are playing on big teams in Europe that are young, rising American stars. As we go to break, don't forget Kings Court. It's a real soccer pub in Edo. Kings Court right next to the stadium, 903 Hutchins. 13 TVs, a giant big screen at Kings Court, home of El Batallon, Houston Red Army, all these different fan groups, Real Madrid as well. They show everything. La Liga, Champions League, Bundesliga, Dynamo, MLS, NFL Sunday Ticket, 24 taps, full bar. Get over there, say hello to Jay, visit the amazing rooftop deck. Say hello to Jay. Kings Court, HTX.com. Be there before the Dynamo Montreal this weekend.
Listening to Soccer Matters on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN 97.5.com.
Brought to you by the Daspit Law Firm from the ESPN 97.5 studios. Here's Glenn Davis.
Can't find a teammate, and now is there a break the other way? Rodriguez, can he catch up to that one and keep it in play? He can. Morris and Rui Diaz are on the far side. Ladero's the trailer. Rodriguez the cross. Jordan Morris!
Hey, Glenn Davis here as we welcome you back to Soccer Matters on ESPN 97.5. What a day it's been. I mean, just incredible. Champions League last night, CONCACAF Champions League this weekend, Dynamo at home against Montreal. I mean, this stuff doesn't stop. Wish I didn't have to sleep. There's so much excitement around the game right now. Advantage BMW. They love soccer down there, by the way. I've driven a BMW for years. I've leased, I've owned from Advantage BMW in Midtown. I have a 5 Series. Absolutely love it. But for me, the other thing I really like is the customer service at BMW. Second to none. Advantage BMW Midtown will cover you with sales, service, and finance. If you're getting into a BMW, you got to go to Advantage BMW Midtown. Go in there, say hello to Philip, say hello to Justin. They love the game of soccer. And also, for our presenting sponsor, John Daspit and the Daspit Law Firm. John and his firm, they're personal injury attorneys. They're going to bring you a personalized approach. DaspitLaw.com. They're 713-322-HURT. The good thing is they're bilingual as well. So English, Spanish, they'll get it done for you, either language. It doesn't matter. If you get in a car accident, we don't want to get in an accident. Motorcycle, industrial, construction, plant, refinery. It happens, though. When it happens, you got to be covered, and you got to have a firm that's going to work for you 24/7, nights and weekends. Get the representation you need at the Daspit Law Firm, DaspitLaw.com, our good friend John Daspit. All right, Valencia, he played over 300 times. He played in 2 Champions League finals. He played in a World Cup and scored in it in 2002. Gaizka Mendieta also played for Barcelona. Caught up with him. He was in town. He was on our pregame show on the Cube 57 before the Dynamo game. Here is my interview with Gaizka Mendieta of Valencia and Barcelona. Well, Gaizka, I know everybody talks in the United States about Barcelona, Real Madrid, Atletico Madrid. But La Liga as a whole, it is a special league. Why was it such a special league to you when you played at Valencia?
Well, I think mainly because it's such a competitive league, such a competitive tournament, especially in the last few years. I know it's easier to people for people to remember only Barça Madrid, but Atlético Madrid also got there in the latest championships winners. We had in the past Valencia, Deportivo, in the European spots, it's been varying from Athletic Bilbao, Villarreal, Celta, obviously Sevilla, which has been the champions 5 times. And also because if you look at the current table nowadays, there's only 14, 13 points difference between relegation and European places, which is nothing like that in other top league in the world. That's why it makes it so special. Also, I think the different clubs, the way they play, the style, is a very attractive football. It's always looking after the ball, the possession, attacking football. I think it has changed also throughout the years since the whole of the teams in La Liga have benefited from the TV rights, so getting more money, allow them to play, to buy more players, and that makes teams even more competitive. Obviously, then Madrid Barça being 2 of the biggest clubs in the world attracts the biggest players in the world. So you have that also with Atletico Madrid. He's been in there in 2 Champions League finals, league champions. And yes, I mean, it's a lot of things that make it the best league in the world. That's what we think and that's what we believe. And there are some of the reasons.
Gaizka Mendieta joining us. He played with Valencia well over 300 times, went to 2 Champions League finals with them, which is remarkable, was capped 40 times by Spain. I was very interested, Gaizka, looking at your youth upbringing, your influences. Obviously, your father, Andreas, was a goalkeeper. That's a big part of it. But tell me about when you were growing up in Castellón and then went to Valencia B before going to the full Valencia side and then playing 300-plus appearances.
Well, yeah, I mean, my dad obviously had an experience in the football world, being himself a goalkeeper. I played for many teams, Deportivo, Real Madrid, Rayo Vallecano. So I had plenty of experience. And when I played my first, well, not even a professional, but my first games in championship, like second division, he preferred me to have me nearer home, because we're living an hour from Valencia, and coming to a team where I would actually be learning, playing alongside so many great players. And that's one of the main reasons I signed for Valencia. Obviously, I was very young. There was big players in the team. So most of my first season in Valencia was with the B team, which allowed me to play, have a regular game, and be available for the first team whenever they needed, which was great in terms of learning for me. And then it was the second year when I actually established myself more in the first team. But yeah, it was... it was quite a big change for me in my life. I have to move out from home, living on my own in Valencia with other teammates. But it was a great experience, especially learning with Gus Hiddink as a manager, Holland sort of a school, so a lot of extra trainings for the youngsters, trying to improve technically. So all these things helped me to develop my game and slowly becoming a better player, because I was very fit, so I could cover a lot of ground on the pitch, but technically I wasn't the player that I became later. So that's thanks to all this sort of process.
Gaizka Mendieta joining us. Gaizka, you had some very differing managers, Claudio Ranieri, Hector Cooper. Talk about those two managers and what they were like.
Well, they were in a way similar, as they gave a lot of relevance to the fitness level. So the team trained really hard, obviously, or getting Italian. We had a process where we had to adapt to each other, the team to the coach, and he had to adapt to the Spanish culture and the Spanish sort of football, which wasn't easy in the beginning, to the point that he nearly got sacked early in the season. But after that, we suited each other. The team understood what he wanted. The team got really, like, the fitness and the training style a bit more adaptive, but obviously not living the Italian style, which was similar to Cooper. Cooper also paid a lot of attention to the fitness level. We trained a lot. It was a team that was really fit, both very tactical. So both very similar in the approach and in the way they wanted the team to play, which I think that's why it suited the transition. We hardly felt that in a way. But different characters. Ranieri was more extrovert, where I think Cooper was a bit more reserved in the way he approached the players. But yeah, in terms of football, very, very similar.
We're talking to Gaizka Mendieta, amazing career at Valencia. Went to Lazio, on to Barcelona, 300-plus appearances at Valencia. Got to the Champions League final twice, once against Real Madrid, their nemesis in La Liga, and then against Bayern Munich. Gaizka, when you walk around these days, do you ever reflect back on, you know, those two Champions League finals and wanting to have won those? And, I mean, one of them you lose in penalty kicks to Bayern Munich. Do you ever reflect back on those games?
I try not to. But, yeah, it's difficult not to think about them. With obviously, like today, for instance, playing Champions League, it always brings to your mind memories. Of course, analyzed both. Since playing them and thinking through, and I mean, being critical, the first one was probably the one that we felt we didn't do it enough to win it back in the day, although the team was playing very well previously to the final, but Madrid was better than us on the final, on the actual day, and they probably deserved to win it. But it was the second one against Bayern Munich in Milan, which actually was more difficult to digest in the way that the game was played. The team, Valencia, was playing very well. We got ahead on the scoreline. And then in the way we lost on the penalty knocked out, which is quite hurtful. So that's probably the one that we felt it was closer to us and it slipped through our hands. And probably for that, it hurts more. But at the same time, I think it was a great achievement for us, a club like Valencia, being new in the Champions League competition and reaching two finals in a row. I think was remarkable. But obviously, when you're there, you just want to win it. And that's still hard.
Gajka, was it difficult for you to change after so many games in La Liga with Valencia? Was it difficult to then move on to Italian football in Lazio? And then obviously you spent a lot of time at Middlesbrough in England, which these were pretty brave moves for you because these are very differing leagues from Spain, right?
Well, yeah, of course it was. It was a difficult decision for me to leave Valencia after 10 years, being the captain and achieving so many things. So I knew in my career I wanted to challenge myself. I wanted to experience football in the best leagues in the world. So back in the day, Italy was another very big league, and obviously England. So for me, at some point, I thought I wanted to try those and go and play in these competitions. And after that season, I spoke to the club. The club also fancied if there was good offers for me that we could study them and consider me leaving as an option. And so we did. In the summer, we had a meeting and we had and valued the offers we had because obviously for Valencia was also, you know, a big income potentially they could get. And Italy was the at that moment the place where it was putting bigger offers for either both for me and for the club. So I ended up playing at Lazio. Yeah, it was difficult because it's different football, but I always had confidence in myself and my football, and that's why I put myself there. And well, unfortunately, it didn't go the way I thought, but it was a great experience. And same, I mean, probably not so much for Barca. It was something I was more familiar with, the football, the club, the back to La Liga, and then in England. In England, probably, yeah, it was another risk, but I wanted to play in different leagues. And after Barcelona, I was on loan, obviously, so after going back to Italy, I didn't want to stay there because my first experience and the way the club sort of deal with the whole situation, we both agreed that finding another club would be the best option. And I thought Middlesbrough was the best option for me at that time, after being in different clubs and different cities. Although it wasn't a big club like the previous ones, it had an ambitious plan to grow in the future, and it was great because we won the cup the first year, we played the final of the Europa League in the third year. So it was a great experience. Although, yeah, like you say, very different approaches to each other.
Gajka Mendieta joining us. Incredible career at Valencia. Played in the Serie A, Lazio, Barcelona, two Champions League finals, then on to Middlesbrough in the Premier League. Also played for the Spanish national team, 40 caps there. If you look, you know, at the career of soccer players, in other words, today, Gajka, I see, you know, Hummels, Thomas Müller, Boateng, you know, the German Federation has come out and said, you know, no more. These guys, we're moving on from them. How difficult is it? And I always am just fascinated how people can stay so good, so consistent for so long and so confident. How difficult is it at that level to stay at the top, stay confident throughout the length of a career? Because it to me, it's amazing the level and the standard certain players can keep for such a long time like you.
Well, obviously it comes with the character, the player, because that's what you face every day in your career. You have to prove every day in every training, in every game, that you are the best, one of the best, and you have to prove people that you are the player, a big player. So you get used to that sort of feeling and challenges that you face every day. It's not easy to when people say to you, you know, like, these guys now, we've all faced those situations. And when they tell you, you know, that's it for the national team, it's hard. It's different when you chose that time, when you chose to say, okay, I think it's my time to quit the national team or this club. But when it's someone else making that decision with you, it's tougher. It's more difficult. But again, it's football, it's life. You get knocked down and you have to get up and you have to keep fighting and you have to keep training and you have to keep playing and proving to everyone that you are this great player. And the confidence you have in yourself, that's the sort of motivation and that you get every day to get out there and do whatever you have to do. But totally agree, it's not easy. When the club comes and tells you or the federation comes and tells you, that's it, we want you, or we won't renew the contract, or we don't want you again, it's very difficult. It's different, obviously, you still got your club career, you still have some kind of motivation to go on and to carry on playing. But when that's the time when you have to quit football completely from everything, that's, I think that's a different situation, and it's really tough when you don't make that decision, because is the end of 15, 16, 17, 18 years career. So it can be very difficult situations, yeah. But I mean, luckily in my case, I saw that coming, so it gave me the chance to mentally, physically, and in general prepare myself for that day. And but some guys, some players don't have the luxury of preparing or knowing in advance that the day is coming. Sometimes you think you might continue, and the club says you're not, and it gets you by surprise. And that's, I think, very, very tough to deal with.
Gajica Mendieta joining us. Gajica, can anything replace the actual playing of the game? Like, was the transition into sort of a normal lifestyle after and the thrill of playing on fields in front of fans and expectation and excitement, was that hard to replace? Was that hard for you once that ended?
I think that's impossible. As simple as that. It's impossible to replace the adrenaline that you get when you score a goal, when you play a final, when you lift a trophy. There's nothing in life that can give you that. You have to replace that with different things. I think you have to kind of focus your career on different aspects. It's good because throughout those years that you've been a player, you've learned a lot of things that you haven't even realized, like leadership, like dealing with pressure, dealing with failure, dealing with success. So if you're able to transport all those things to your new life, whether it's in the business world, if you're carrying as a manager or a sporting director, or in anything you want to do related to football or not, I think it's great because you get a lot of things throughout your career. But you don't get that hype and that adrenaline that you get through your body with football, like anything in life. At least I haven't found it yet. If I do, I will let you know.
What are you doing now, Gajica? What are the things in life that you like to do? Obviously, you're an ambassador for La Liga. You're doing a wonderful job, obviously, of that. What else in life do you do now?
Well, I was lucky to, like I said earlier, that I kind of saw my end sort of coming. So I had different businesses running already, like that it kept me busy and get my head busy in different things. Apart from ambassador with La Liga, I do also still play some games. I do some TV as a pundit. I do as ambassador for Barca as well, for UEFA. I have, like I said, other businesses. I do from time to time as a DJ as well. So luckily I have a lot of things going on in my agenda that keep me busy enough these days.
Gajica, listen, we really appreciate you coming on. You're a tremendous ambassador for all the clubs you played for, Valencia, Barcelona, on and on. But you're also a great ambassador for La Liga. You're also a gentleman, which I thank you for coming down to Houston and being brought to Houston and jumping on our pregame show with the Houston Dynamo, who did once play against Valencia years back in a friendly. And we really thank you for all the time that you've given us, and we wish you the best of luck in the future.
Thank you. It was my pleasure to come to Houston, and I hope to be back soon. I felt, very welcome. Unfortunately, I wasn't there for long, but again, I hope to be back soon. And all the best to everyone, all your listeners.
Love getting the opportunity to get the opinion of Major League Soccer from people like Gajica Mendieta, and what a career he had. What an interesting interview that was. We thank him very much for that. Again, a reminder, the Daspit Law Firm is our presenting sponsor of Soccer Matters on ESPN 97.5. I don't get on the air without him. That's the bottom line. Our sponsors get us on the air. You want to keep hearing soccer talk, we got to support these people. John and his firm, bilingual, 713-322-HURT. They are personal injury attorneys. Whatever accident you get in, you don't want one, but when you do, you need representation. Car, motorcycle, plant, refinery, you might drive an 18-wheeler. They're going to have you covered 24-7, nights and weekends. Get the representation you need. The Daspit Law Firm. More to come on Soccer Matters ESPN 97.5. Thank you for listening in.
ESPN 97.5. You're listening to Soccer Matters on ESPN 97.5.
On ESPN 97.5.com.
Brought to you by the Daspit Law Firm. from the ESPN 97.5 studios. Here's Glenn Davis.
Switch to Taliafico, the quick ball on. It's beautiful to watch. Van der Beke will get it back again. Dusan Tadic. Oh, what a goal! That's 3-0 up. It's sensational.
All right, we're going to wrap it up in big style here tonight. Before we do, just a quick word here for Advantage BMW. I've driven one for years. I've leased, I've owned. The only place I go is Advantage BMW Midtown. I love the drive of a BMW, but what I also love is the fact that at Advantage BMW, customer service is second to none. Advantage BMW Midtown, as you covered, with sales, service, finance, it could be done so easy. Get that hometown advantage at Advantage BMW Midtown, AdvantageBMWHouston.com. Say hello to Philip and say hello to Justin when you're down there. They are big soccer fans. All right, a great moment here now in a World Cup year on the big stage. A FIFA Women's World Cup will be this summer in France. It gives us an opportunity now to highlight the Houston Dash, who will look to get into the playoffs this year for the first time. New coach named, a guy I've known a long time, James Clarkson. James joins us now. James, how are you?
I'm good, thanks, Glenn. How are you?
I'm excellent, and I know you finally got the team and the squad onto the field this week, so it's probably great to be out there. Just some general thoughts, on the season and getting out there and getting underway.
Yeah, it's we've finally got started on the field. So Monday was the first day of preseason, so we're 3 days into it. And it's been great to get actually onto the grass and get the ball rolling and start working with the players. So it was an unusual situation because I'd only met two players leaving into pre-season. So there's a lot of work to be done in building relationships, understanding, and really getting that plate, the coach-player relationship going. So we've tried to hit the ground running. We've put together a great staff with Monica Gonzalez, Eddie Robinson, and Brendan Saylor within the technical staff, which I think has been a huge asset to the players, to myself, to really give this a massive push this season.
James Clarkson joining us. If you want information on the Houston Dash, I guess you go to HoustonDynamo.com. There's a column. Click on Dash. But if you look at this roster, it's a wonderful roster. Number of very talented players. Sofia Huerta, who was picked up last year. This is a World Cup year, so you've got a couple of players, I think it's four, and correct me if I'm wrong, that will go off to the World Cup. What makes this unique about this season, James, that you are playing in a World Cup year and teams are going to lose players to this incredible event this summer?
Yes, it's hugely exciting. And the players that we've got going, we wish them all the best and that they are on good sides. We've got three Canadians, two Australians, English, and we have a Jamaican going as well. So it's tough, balancing the roster and having the players gone for probably about 12 games is going to be a real challenge, but every team's in the same boat. But what we feel that we really have this year and with the depth that we've added with players that we've brought in is we feel we've got a really strong roster that can cope with those losses and we can be really competitive during that World Cup spell. And with those 12 games, if we can really take advantage of it, historically looking at it, if you win 12 games, you're guaranteed a playoff spot. So that World Cup period is going to be vitally important for us in our quest to making the playoffs.
Now, some interesting news, too. Rachel Daly, who plays for England, they ended up winning the She Believes Cup over teams like the United States and Brazil. The Canadian national team ended up third at the Algarve Cup. So your players are out there on the international stage this week. I'm assuming you watched a lot of international soccer recently.
I've watched a huge amount of women's soccer at the moment. I watched all the Australian League when there was nothing else on. I was watching the college games before the draft. I'm constantly watching all of the previous Dash games and other games in the league last year to get a better understanding of the teams as we prepare for the season. Other than watching the Champions League, the only other thing that's on my TV at the moment is women's soccer. So it's trying to get as much information, get as prepared as possible, and make sure that when the season comes around on April the 14th, we're ready and you know, and we can hit the ground running.
James Clarkson, Houston Dash, got a lot of great players to keep an eye on. Jane Campbell, who's been a part of the national team, Alicia Chapman, Rachel Daly, who's with England going to the World Cup, Sofia Huerta, who was picked up last year, Veronica Lotsko, Christy Mewis coming back from injury, Kalia Ojai, Nichelle Prince, a lot of great names, very talented players. You're going to want to get down there and watch them this year. The last one for you is, and this was one that came up with a lot of fans, why the women's game now for James Clarkson? Because it is interesting because you've spent your entire coaching career on the men's side.
Yeah.
I have to ask you that one.
No, it's a valid question. And it's the certainly last year I was very interested when the Dash hired Vera, and I was really excited because I knew about her, knew about her husband and the stuff that they've done. So I was really, I was disappointed that she left, but I looked at it and, you know, Eddie Robinson's a good friend and he was involved last year and I spent a lot of time talking to him about it. They trained at the same time as the academy last year, so it gave me opportunities to watch and observe, and I was really intrigued by it, and when the opportunity came, I really wanted to give it a go. And as I've said to everybody, it's football, and it's the same. And I haven't been shocked at all this week that their attitude, that their professionalism to it, the intensity that they've brought to every single activity that we've done in training, the real desire and will to want to win, it's exactly the same. And it's been excellent, and it's something that really excites me, and you know, and I really want to give it a good crack, and I'm very thankful that the club gave me the opportunity.
Yeah, congratulations to you. Is what will have to change for you as a coach when dealing with women as opposed to men? Because it is a different. It is different.
It is. It's. But through all of this and through my experience and everything, it's that. The overriding thing for me is that everybody's an individual and you've got to treat them as an individual and they're people, and it's about how you manage people and how you deal with people. And that management of the individuals is vitally important. And, you know, we laid out some simple things and some standards at the start of the week. And, you know, I think from my side, it's about being honest, treating them with respect, and, you know, challenge them and trying to make them better. And I think that's the exciting thing with the staff and everything, is everybody's fully committed to trying to make each individual better and then collectively making the team better. And, you know, we want the players to be successful, because ultimately as coaches we want to be successful as well. So it's treating them as human beings, treating them as people, showing them the respect, pushing them when we need to, and really taking time to develop relationships and show that we do care about them and we want to help them and we want to win.
James, thank you very much for coming on tonight. We'll be checking in with you throughout the season. We appreciate it. Best of luck with the Dash. Get it done in preseason, and thank you for your time tonight.
All right. Appreciate it. Thanks very much, Glenn.
All right. That's James Clarkson, now the head coach of the Houston Dash in a World Cup year. A lot of talent on that team. Going to be a fun team to watch down at BBVA Compass Stadium. That does it for us tonight. We thank all our guests, all the listeners, callers tonight on the program. We appreciate it. Podcasts are at podcastarena.com. You can also get them on iTunes. Head over to Facebook Soccer Matters. By the way, hit the shop. Pick up a couple T-shirts. The Soccer Matters T-shirts, 20% goes back to the Texas Children's Hospital and the Curing Children's Cancer Fund. So it's a T-shirt with meaning. I made sure I got top-notch, the best quality T-shirts, so these things feel good when you wear them. So that's it. That'll do it tonight for Andrew Carlson, Victor Ariza, and everybody who tuned in tonight. Thank you. Until next week, Soccer Matters.